true.
Like other little boys in your neighborhood, don't wait till the night before Christmas to be good. And dolls with curls are for the little girls who do the things they should. So don't wait till the night before Christmas to be good. You can't fool Mr. Santa Claus, he knows right from wrong. And you can't be right for just one night, you gotta be right right along. You'd love to see another Christmas tree where the old one stood. So don't wait till the night before Christmas to be good.
Welcome back. Dick Robertson, Don't Wait Till the Night Before Christmas. We all know that one, right? By heart. top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. Another installment of Monday with Mitzi, Mondays with Mitzi. And this is the last Monday before Christmas. Just a recap of the announcements that I mentioned in the first hour. The schedule change has arrived, obviously. See the website for details if you're not familiar or still confused about that. The network will be taking a Christmas break from Monday, December 25th through Friday, December 29th. And we will not be doing live broadcasts throughout the week, next week. We're in the midst of the second annual John Stabmiller book drive. Congratulations to previous winners, Joyce, Lynn, Charles, and now Linda. And this week's book is Tim Cohen's The Antichrist in a Cup of Tea. So, and the Pro One holiday sale, the Pro One water, gravity-fed water filters and systems, that sale. Visit the website, ProOneUSA.com. Find what you want. Call the network, 800-724-2719, extension 3. And get up to 25% off filters and accessories and 15% off most systems, whole house systems. There you go. So back to what we were talking about, and to just to clarify on what I said when I said to loan something, you know, in that scenario, you know, you would commit a felony, I would be an accessory to that. I was speaking specifically to your remark about, you know, your friend said she was talking about what are now considered high capacity magazines in Washington, which is more than 10 rounds in a magazine. So I was sort of referring to a specific firearm. And William Kirk is the guy who's the attorney who heads up Washington gun law. And he has actually been on King 5, I think, maybe among other channels, talking about this. And he said, you know, most things that you buy these days are multi-stack or double stack, and therefore are, you know, they're most of them are typically more than 10 rounds, and handguns even. And that's just the way they're made. And so that's, you know, by doing that, it's a sweeping thing. And so I was referring to a specific handgun and saying this one that I'm thinking of, for example, you know, it comes stock with 10 plus one magazines and also 15 plus one magazines. So that would be a felony under that new Washington law that I think went into effect last year. And so she was saying, you know, for her, those things are grandfathered in, but you can't get them anymore. You can't get them at all now.
No.
You can't go out of state and get them because that's, you know, now it's a criminal offense in Washington.
And
so
it's a, any of this, yes.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary thing. And I really think that that's the whole idea. You know, no, you can still own guns, but for most people, it's so overwhelming. It's, I think it would scare most people away.
I agree. And it was, you know, my eyes were opened up a great deal about the process and the commitment. If you're actually going to get involved in something like that, and, you know, like we were talking about before, you know, in where we come from, you know, it was something that you learned about from the time that you were small. And, you know, they weren't, it's just crazy. Like I said, I really don't even know what to say because it's such a different world than it was when I was young.
Yeah. And when I was young, for that matter.
Right.
Wasn't that long ago, you know, and if we go back to the founding of this country after, you know, sort of post-revolution era, right around that, the American Revolutionary period, that was the sentiment that was expressed. And it's pretty, I mean, what does any of this have to do with Christmas? Well, maybe nothing, but I think the two deals that I mentioned, in the first hour may sort of harken back to a bygone era, which we're speaking to. But the thing that fascinates me most about this is if, you know, how, you know, who was it? Nietzsche or Jung, I think it was Jung. Who was it who said, you know, the only thing we learn from history is that that history teaches us nothing, basically. And just to think about the American experience, if we can take the history at face value, you know, we have the Declaration of Independence, and the sentiment that sort of expresses the, you know, sort of sums up the issue. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter, abolish, to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organize its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And so then, you know, the point is made, and accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But then there's this: when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future safe security. And so this is the foundation. This is kind of the cornerstone of the American revolutionary sentiment. And out of that, we get the Second Amendment, which is pretty clear language. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And, you know, even recently, cases like DC versus Heller back in 2008 have held that this extends to the individual right of self-defense and so on. So infringed, you know, shall not be infringed means what it says what it means. And if you just are even remotely familiar with that history, what was the, you know, what was the situation with, you know, I mean, if we take it at face value, what was the situation with the British Crown and the American colonies and colonists? They, you know, there was something going on. And so if you're even remotely familiar with that history, then it should be self-explanatory. And the more you dive into it, the more, you know, if we take it at face value, the more self-explanatory it becomes. These people are trying to defend themselves against the tyranny of their own government at the time. It's not so much self-defense. So it's interesting that basically the same thing is happening now, and you have so many people sticking their heads in the sand. Anyway, I didn't want to get off on this tangent, but just going back into the history of our country, there are so many quotes by these guys.
Yeah, and I don't know who said it before Harry Truman did, but I know I read in Plain Speaking, which is a conversation with Harry Truman written by Merle Miller. Harry Truman said, if you don't study history, it's going to repeat itself. And that's certainly what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I could go down a laundry list of quotes from the founders. There's one that I'm struggling to remember, but you know, to your point about when you grew up and me saying when I grew up, which obviously you're familiar with as well, there are quotes about from the founders that basically from the earliest age, and the reason why that's significant to me, you know, from the earliest age, basically, people should be acquainted with arms, firearms. The reason why that, you know, resonates with me, I guess, is because I think about our experience as young people and, you know, visiting family and in a 900 square foot house, there's guns everywhere. Not crazy guns everywhere, but they're, you know, they're in corners, they're standing in corners and stuff and here and there. And they were just part of the woodwork kind of. It wasn't like a thing. And to my knowledge, none of the kids, I mean, even from very, very small ages, you know, kids didn't mess with them. We all knew, you know, this is something for a specific application and you don't mess with it in the house. It's not yours anyway, so leave it alone. And there were never any issues.
Yep, and whether you were at church or the grocery store, or Jack's Cafe or school, there were gun racks with guns everywhere.
Yeah. Yep. It was commonplace. A rifle and a fishing rod in the back. Yep.
True. It's true. Well, it's a new chapter for me for sure. And I didn't realize how serious it is to get involved in it, but
yeah,
it's pretty intense.
So one of the things, and I'll just sort of leave it at this and, you know, we can move on. But one of the things that I've been talking about, speaking of that lately, is I think for the people who are hysterically anti-gun, I think one of the, and, you know, again, I think this is why it's kind of a convergent point to, you know, a talking point to bring people together and maybe bridge divides in a way that is not, it's maybe counterintuitive a little bit. I've been saying, For the rabid anti-gun types, maybe go fill out a 4473. And I think that even doing the home ec kind of thing where you know, back in home ec where you got the baby or the egg and you have to carry the baby or the egg around for a week or a month or whatever. And if you lose your baby or mishandle your baby, then you fail the class. I think we could, you know, have somebody fill out a form 4473 and issue them a dummy gun. And same thing, you know, I mean, in Washington, like if you're, you know, you leave a firearm in the car, you have to make sure it isn't visible, you know, to the public or whatever. It has to be concealed like in a console or something, and just all kinds of weird things like that. Who can access it? You know, what is it? What's the word? I can't think of the word. Prohibited persons. That's what it is. Prohibited persons. Well, geez, what are you, an attorney? How are you supposed to know what all the prohibited persons are that aren't supposed to? It's just this overwhelming responsibility that the rabid anti-gun types don't realize. And if you go through that process and all that rigmarole, then you quickly discover, if you didn't know before, that you just a normal law-abiding person who might want to defend themselves, like what you're talking about, you feel like a criminal doing that. And that's very interesting, not to mention, you know, things like the form 3310, for example, that's triggered if you buy a couple of pistols within a, you know, the same week, a 5-day period, things like that. You know, it's just interesting, all of these flags and all of this reporting and all of this stuff that, to me, speaking of the Bernaysian influence, is all in an effort to socially engineer people to be afraid, very afraid of firearm ownership. And then, you know, like you said, you know, talking to your friend, if you use your gun in self-defense, then the first thing the authorities do is confiscate it, and who knows when you'll get it back.
Correct.
So.
And her background was interesting, too, because her her father was a highway patrolman. And so, her, you know, she was always exposed to loaded guns in the house. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, his gun was always in his holster, among other guns. And it was just a part of her everyday life, too.
Yeah. So normal. But, you know, I bet her perspective is interesting based on the way that things have changed over the years. She's probably a person who grew up shooting 357s into the bank next to the side of the house or whatever, too.
Uh-huh. Correct.
It's interesting, you know, I think that things are really starting to heat up, and I don't know, maybe people are sitting up and taking notice now, but like I said, I think that to have the average person who, you know, says, nobody should own guns, or except, you know, maybe certain people or the authorities or whatever, it would be an interesting experience to see that no matter who you are, you have to go through this process that makes you feel like a criminal. Even if you're the, you know, Mother Teresa, the most saintly person has to go through the same process. And that, I think, is very disconcerting, especially with our, you know, again, with our American history in view.
I agree.
Pretty interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting stuff.
So we've obsessed on that a little bit, and we're headed into a break in a second. We haven't. I maybe have. I don't know. It's a thing, you know, it's really weighing heavy on my heart and mind, which is probably oozing out into the broadcast. We'll move on when we come back, I think. We'll see. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
I'm doing my Christmas dreaming. a little love.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details, or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Home for Christmas today.
right, welcome back. Mondays with Mitzi, my mom, Mitzi. We're having fun. The last Monday before Christmas. Next Monday is Christmas. Can I just say one more thing before we move on?
Oh, just one more thing.
Just one more thing. Maybe I can sort of sum it up. I feel like I'm making a, you know, taking a long trip to get to a short point. But one of the remarks that comes to mind that I was thinking of earlier is Thomas Jefferson in a letter, June 8, 1778, which obviously is around the American Revolutionary period, like I was saying, a letter to Giovanni Fabroni. And in it, in that letter, Jefferson wrote, and I'm, it's an abridged excerpt, I will say, but I don't think it's not, I'm not mischaracterizing it. So Jefferson wrote, "I enclose you a list of the killed, wounded, and captives of the enemy from the commencement of hostilities at Lexington in April 1775 until November 1777, since which there has been no event of any consequence." And he goes on, "I think that upon the whole, it has been about one half the number lost by them, in some instances more, but in others less. This difference is ascribed to our superiority in taking aim when we fire, every soldier in our army having been intimate with his gun from his infancy." So that's a significant statement by Thomas Jefferson. And the reason that I mention that is because that, I feel like that's how I grew up. It was, you know, it was normal for this to be the case not too long ago, especially in places like Montana, you know, to be familiar with his gun from his infancy. I've had conversations with people who are from Montana, born around, you know, the same time I was born, who have spent most or all of their lives in Montana, who say, no, you know, young people, you know, well, what is the right age for people to be acquainted with firearms? Because according to Thomas Jefferson, you know, it was from infancy that was responsible in significant part for our freedom as Americans. And he also said to his nephew, Peter Carr, when asked about the best form of exercise, he said, "I advise the gun. A strong body makes the mind strong." And he said, "I advise the gun. While this gives moderate exercise to the body, it gives boldness, enterprise, and independence to the mind. Games played with the ball and others of that nature are too violent for the body and stamp no character on the mind. Let your gun, therefore, be your constant companion of your walks." And so Granny obviously knew the best form of exercise. But, you know, to finish the thought in all seriousness, it was a rite of passage at one point, I think, in America. Even if it was, you know, whether you got a 22 as a young person or even just a BB gun, which, by the way, is buckshot, if people don't know. BB is a size of buckshot. That was a rite of passage, and those days are fleeting, if not gone. And I think that's a shame because it's part of our American heritage. And like you said, and like I said, growing up, it was not, you know, it was very common to see guns in gun racks and pickups, and there were no school shootings and things.
Yes.
And I guess we're headed to another break. All right, so we will move on. I promise. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Great, Columbo. Up above the party, dressed in white, shining in the candlelight. Every little boy has lots of fun with his trumpet.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around, and be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Till we see thee lie above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in thy dark street shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight.
I'm a strange guy.
Really?
Yeah, I worry. I mean, little things bother me. I'm a worrier. I mean, little insignificant details, I lose my appetite, I can't eat.
You know, there's only one thing that I'm not clear about.
Actually, there is one thing.
One other thing.
One more question, sir. About those sacks of gold.
Yeah, just one more thing. Right?
Right?
You know, those little insignificant details, I lose my appetite, I can't sleep. I resemble that remark.
You certainly do. Columbo.
Yeah. So it's the bottom of the second hour already. It seems like time is flying. I wanted to touch on love a little bit. Don't think that I'll dive all the way down the rabbit hole. There was another verse that I had in mind. I don't remember what it is now, off the top of my head. Maybe it'll come to me. But, you know, 1 Corinthians 13, just juxtaposing love and knowledge. It's interesting how important love is. And the reason I wanted to juxtapose love and knowledge is because, you know, sort of poking fun at myself a little bit of self-effacing humor, perhaps. I've mentioned many times on this broadcast from 1 Corinthians chapter 1, which is an interesting chapter, but in verses 22 and 23, it says in the NASB, "For indeed Jews ask for signs and Greeks search for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, to Jews a stumbling block and to Gentiles foolishness." And, you know, that could easily circle back around to love, but just skipping forward to 1 Corinthians 13, it's interesting, you know, this is the quintessential definition of love, real love, not just a feeling that you know, a mud puddle you step in. So do you mind if I read it?
Please do.
So in the NASB 95, and you know, I mean, we could have a conversation about how in the King James, they use the word charity for love and how that has become a pejorative these days. I don't want your charity, when it was supposed to be the highest expression of love, a patient, long suffering, loving kindness, which gets back to what I was saying about the movies, really trying to highlight those. Jimmy Stewart does a good job in It's a Wonderful Life of, you know, finally figuring out what's important. And, you know, so does everybody else, apparently, except Mr. Potter. And in The Family Man, I think something that's lost on most people is that in the beginning, the airport scene, Taya Leone's character Kate says at the airport, "I choose us." You know, she says, basically, "I think we're making a huge mistake." And she says, "I choose us." And then into the movie, when he's having a glimpse, as Don Cheadle says, you know, a glimpse is by definition an impermanent thing, Jack. She says it again, you know. He's trying to have it all, and she says, "You know what? I thought we were going to grow old together in this house and have holidays here and stuff. But if this is what you need, I love you. That's more important to me than our address. I choose us." And then all of a sudden, you know, he gets it. And so, you know, he chases her down at the airport. And he says, "You're a better person than I am. And it made me a better person to be around you. And I've seen, you know, what it could be like together. I choose us." And that really is sort of, you know, that's kind of the sentiment of the holidays. We're supposed to do that. This is in a romantic setting, obviously. But what about you know, I mean, the cliche of the holiday season is that, you know, families are dysfunctional and it's always a love-hate thing to get together. Sure, we want to get together, but oh my gosh, we're all so dysfunctional. And well, actually, they're all dysfunctional. I'm not. These lepers in my family are all dysfunctional and it's difficult to be around them. And I think, you know, that's kind of the cliche a little bit. And, you know, it's definitely, I think, cultural. You and I have talked about that a little bit. The fact that in other countries, several generations live in a house. And that was common in America, you know, in a bygone era. So anyway, a little background. So to read it, 1 Corinthians 13 in the NASB. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, there's knowledge. And if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Love is patient, love is kind, and it is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly, it does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. But if there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away. If there are tongues, they will cease. If there is knowledge, there's knowledge again, it will be done away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will be done away. When I was a child, I used to speak like a child, think like a child, reason like a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I will know fully, just as I also have been fully known. But now faith, hope, love, abide these three, but the greatest of these is love. So it's interesting, the juxtaposition of knowledge, love and knowledge. And, you know, you could, I think, make the argument that knowledge should be kind of the handmaiden of love, or should foster love. Maybe it should be used for that purpose. Certainly not for, you know, arrogance. So anyway, the juxtaposition of love and knowledge. Knowledge will be done away because eventually everything will be known and made known, but love never fails. So I think that really kind of, for me, sums it up this time of year.
I totally agree with you. I couldn't agree more, because we make mistakes, you know, and especially with relationships, and especially with parenting, there isn't a how-to on any of it, because everyone is unique. And what stands the test of time is, you know, not to go away and always to do what you can with love. And, you know, that's interesting that you bring that up. I've been seeing a lot of clips lately of Tiger Woods and his kids. And I can't help but think about the roller coaster ride that his family has been on, and especially, you know, in the public eye, and what is true and what is not true and that sort of thing, because we know, you know, that there's so many things that are misleading. But when you watch clips of he and his kids, you know, love has stood the test of time, and what people thought of him and judged him, those that chose to do that. But the love and the respect and the admiration that I see in those clips brings me great joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's a lot more to the story, obviously.
Amen.
Because I think it seems like he and Elon have a pretty good, you know, working, co-parenting relationship. I don't know. You know, like you said, I mean, I don't know them and what can you believe, but it seems like based on, for example, what you said. So that's interesting. And I see the same thing. You know, I think it's deeper than just infatuation and, you know, for example, Charlie idolizing his father. I think it's much deeper than that. And I think you hear that from Tiger and his relationship with his father.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, that was what popped into my head when you read that wonderful excerpt. But, you know, it's just refreshing the feeling that you get of what happens when you don't pay attention to the mongers and you just are steady. You know, mm-hmm. you don't go away and you do what you do with love. And it's funny how it all seems to come out okay.
Yeah. And I don't know if you want to speak to, speaking of parenting and no manual, one of the other, I think, challenges this time of year, it's, you know, I think it's, maybe it's easy for people to, I think by nature, we're all kind of self-absorbed typically. And I think it's easy to think about that from, you know, think about the holidays from that perspective. But as a parent, speaking of no manual, I think, you know, especially as children grow up and grow older, it's, I think, easy for parents to really be, succumb to feelings of guilt and disappointment and things, whether that's something that someone said or just something that they deal with within themselves. And to be, you know, I think it's easy to become overwhelmed by feelings of guilt and wishing that you would have done better as a parent, especially around the holidays. And that is a really interesting and can be, I think, difficult dichotomy to work through during the holidays.
Oh, absolutely huge. You know, when for the most of your parenting career, you're a single parent, and not only that, but you're self-employed. And the, you know, even though you have support of friends and family, the holidays are a big, ugly monster. And, doing as much as you can and doing the best you can with knowing that that monster is looming, it's really, really hard. And as Christopher knows, you know, I definitely had years of challenges trying to get through many, many, many Christmases. And then the funniest thing happened as soon as we were through it and, you know, everybody was kind of doing their own thing, the PTSD that kicked in from that, you know, going back and just every year reliving like a pile of years with remorse, it took a long time to come to grips with it, forgiving yourself and seeing the rainbow at the end of that storm. We go through those things, I think, so that we can have a lot more grace and understanding for other people going through it. And that's personally why I do what I do with Safety Net, because I know how hard it is. And so that's why I try to pay back a little bit, because I've been through the other side of that storm and come out with the rainbow.
Yeah. Well, I think that in my recollection, you know, I mean, how much is enough? There's always more. You can always do more, give more, whatever. In terms of stuff, it's like, you know, who's the toughest person in the neighborhood? There's always somebody tougher that's going to come along. And, you know, someone can always give more in terms of maybe material things. But I think of Granny and how she just, I don't know. I mean, I, from my understanding, she just, I think of, you know, two Bible verses stick out in my mind in terms of faith. He that doubteth is, in the King James, he that doubteth is damned, for whatsoever is not of faith is sin. That's Romans 14:23. And therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, or to do right in some translations, and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Again, that's in the King James. But, you know, the doubting, it's easy to doubt yourself. James chapter 1 deals with the doubt, and other places. And Revelation 21:8 is kind of a scary treatment of the doubt. I'll finish that thought on the other side of the break. And hopefully it'll be a bit of encouragement in the last segment. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
You know, I think about the decision you made. Maybe I was being naive, but I believed that we would grow old together in this house. That we'd spend holidays here and have our grandchildren come visit us here. I had this image of us all gray and wrinkly, and me working in the garden and you repainting the deck. But things change. If you need this, Jack, if you really need this, I will take these kids from a life they love, and I'll take myself from the only home we've ever shared together, and I'll move wherever you need to go. I'll do that because I love you. I love you. And that's more important to me than our address. I choose us.
All right, who has dry eyes? I got something in my eye. She swears to her own hurt, does not change. She chooses us. It's beautiful.
It's those allergies kicking in.
Yeah. So I just wanted to offer some encouragement. You know, we can all only do the best we can do, and that's, you know, that's good enough, I would say, to, if we're, you know, for those who are maybe struggling this time of year during this season, who are, you know, maybe struggling with a sense of self-loathing, I've failed, or, you know, whatever, all you can do is the best you can, so to speak, and that's enough. And usually it's, I mean, it's not the material things. And that was the point that you raised a few Mondays ago, that, you know, we don't remember the stuff. We remember the memories.
Exactly. Exactly. And the bottom line is, you know, you just stick around and you love and you watch the miracle that unfolds, because sometimes those darkest things turn out to be amazing, miraculous blessings. And I've witnessed that on so many occasions. It's been, you know, it's been the worth the ride to get to the seasoned age that I am.
Yeah. Well seasoned.
Well seasoned.
And I mean that in a experience way, not in a year's way. So just, you know, brew a pot of coffee, make some pumpkin pie, make sure it has the melanoma on the top of it or it's not done yet. Make some plum cake, get the cards ready, make sure the coffee's piping hot and the table's wiped off, and you're good to go.
Let's do it. That makes for a Merry Christmas for me, for sure.
Yeah. Me too. That's it. That's the end already.
Merry Christmas, Christopher.
Merry Christmas, Mitzi. Thank you very much, Mom, for doing this. And this is the last Monday with Mitzi before Christmas. Folks, I hope it was entertaining and edifying. As always, it's an honor and pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Bye.
I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly.
cows, too.
Easoff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.